Welcome to another wild episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Animal Man, Deus Ex Machina by Grant Morrison. And now, the cast begins.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another very meta episode of Atomic Powered Supercast. My name's Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Yep, that's me.
And Jen.
Hello.
And this week, we're talking about Animal Man, Volume 3, Deus Ex Machina, by Grant Morrison, with art from Chaz Tuog. Tuog? Trog?
Sure, I don't know.
Chaz Trogdor. Burninating. Okay. This is from 1989, issues 18 to 26. I think this is the oldest thing we've ever read by Grant Morrison.
Yes, I was going to say, this is not the oldest thing we've ever
read. No. But by Grant Morrison, I do believe this is the oldest thing.
Yes.
Well, early on in his career, which is why when he draws himself, he still has hair.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird, because I've never seen the man with hair, even in pictures.
I was like, why do you look like a young Neil Gaiman?
Because they're from the same island.
Kind of.
Yeah. Alright, so, that's what we're talking about this week. This is the most meta thing I have ever read.
Seriously.
Okay, what did you guys think of it?
If you find peyote buttons on the top of a mesa, what possesses you to take them?
Well, they were on the spirit journey, though. And they thought they were... Yeah, I guess if you were like, hey, look, drugs. I mean, that's essentially what it amounted to, right?
Yeah. Hey, look, drugs. Let's try these.
But there was the magic paper in his pocket, in Dr. Highwater's pocket, that sent them to that mesa.
Okay, you're a superhero. People come by to wreck your house all the time. A random dude you don't know comes by, takes you out to a mesa, and he's like, let's do these drugs.
He's like, look, I got this magic paper in my pocket. But you have to just assume it wasn't always this map. Because nobody else saw that it was, that it used to have Animal Man's address on it or something.
Yeah.
But anyways, I don't think that's
the point of this scene. The beginning of this comic is just so bizarre, but I don't know, like, I liked the peyote thing. It was cool. It was an interesting way to, like, reveal stuff about the universe, but it's like, really, Animal Man? You think that's a good idea?
Well, to be fair, he's not the smartest guy in the DC universe. I mean, he's not dumb like Booster, but he's not, you know, Brainiac.
I feel like that's
a very large gap.
Yeah.
That's like a very, very large gap. Street smarts, though.
Well, yeah, if it was a different time in the late 80s. And to be fair, they went out there looking for a spiritual journey. That's what they went up there to do. Right, and if the map happened to point them towards peyote buttons, maybe it means they were supposed to take them. And to be fair, also, this is the way that you should draw a trip. Like, the art for Animal Man tripping out is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, fucking comets and planets and shit shooting past the mesa, things coming out of an eyeball. There's a giant
lucky
eagle
all of a sudden
the
has his costume on.
Yeah, this is the way you draw it. So what, had either of you heard of Animal Man before this?
No.
Yes.
Yeah?
I had read Animal Man when I read 52 from DC.
Okay, yes, that's right.
But I didn't really know much about him. I mean, they kind of gave you some background on him in 52, but not really. I knew that he had the power of animals.
Yeah, that's about all I had told you was his stick, was that he had the power of things near him.
Yeah, but kind of random outside of the... non-related question. I mean, I guess it is. So there's Vixen, right?
Yeah.
Does she have the same powers as him?
Yes and no. Vixen can pull from the powers that she gets from her necklace. So she has a necklace made up of teeth.
Right.
And she can pull from the powers of the animals whose teeth that she has on the necklace. So she can swap that in and out, you know? And she doesn't have to be near them, necessarily.
Well, he doesn't either. I mean,
not anymore, but her powers are more finite.
Okay.
It's restricted to what's on her neck, whereas him, if he needs, say, an ant, all he has to do is run until he gets near an ant, and then he has powers of an ant.
But he doesn't need to be near an ant anymore.
No, not anymore. He's connected to everything.
Fix that
the
problem.
The whole universe.
What happens when you do some drugs?
Well, what happens when you realize that the person reading you, you're connected to them too, then you get, through the morphogenetic field, you get their perception of you being in the comic.
Hmm.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Whole point of the book.
I gotta say, though, that the peyote trip had, like, one of my favorite scenes I've ever read in comics, where the eagle's, like, doing this really stereotypical thing of, like, you need to trust me, you need to jump, because only after you jump will you set yourself free, and he does it, and then it's like, you see a splat, and then the blood comes up, and then he wakes up, and he's like, ah, and the eagle's like, hey, you shouldn't listen to random eagles.
To random talking fucking animals.
That was pretty epic. I really appreciated that.
Moral of your story is that sometimes nature can be a dick.
And it's funny how they were, like, interacting with each other, but they were clearly on different trips.
Yeah.
Because the whale, like, comes to eat the mesa. And then you just see Animal Man, like, in the fetal position while Dr. Highwater's talking to the eagle.
Amazing. But they're still talking to each other, talking about their trips.
He's like, look at the whale! The island's coming towards us! I feel like they were whispering the whole time, too.
Probably. Well, I mean, both of these are people who have kids and families. So they're both old enough, ostensibly, to know how drugs work, right? They're sort of more cognizant than if it were a pair of 16-year-olds out there.
Yeah.
They're more cognizant of what they're trying to get out of this trip and what it does to them. And the one guy's a doctor, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not like
a
doctor with a stethoscope, but he's a smart enough man to realize the effects of drugs.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they can be self-aware during the trip.
The whole time they were kind of like, this isn't real.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated. But.
And then after that, when he gets home, murdered kids. Murdered wife.
Murder.
Murder.
Right. And then after that, what happened?
Murder.
He took a gritty turn.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the word gritty for a little bit?
Sure.
It's like the most cliche, overused word in all of comics. Every character has been gritty at some point.
This thing is, everybody needs to get gritty. They gotta make them more real.
I don't think that needs to happen.
Well, sometimes when you roll around on top of a mesa, you get grit all over you.
Or if you take a trip through the South, you just get covered in grits. It's unrelated, not in here at all, but that's also a way that you could get, you know, gritty.
I'm just tired of gritty reboots of every character.
But I think that's the purpose of this, is Grant Morrison did everything to this character that readers hate.
Yes, and I agree with you.
Make him edgy, give him a new costume, more black, more sleek, more dark, kill his wife and kids, give him some emotional drama, everything that readers fucking hate.
Team up with Mirror Master of all the villains.
The lamest goddamn mirror... Have you ever heard of Mirror Master before?
Mm-mm.
Basically, Mirror Master is a dude who stole a bunch of technology that some guy had been researching into mirrors, and he doesn't know how they work or why they work. He's kind of figuring out as he goes along. That's why, like, he shoots the one bug thing. He's like, I don't know, I haven't figured out how it works yet, but it shoots things. I like it. He's just kind of a dumb guy.
It is a cool power, though.
Yeah, to be able to travel through mirrors.
You can also be pretty voyeuristic with that.
Well, that is... Mirror Master, definitely. But I appreciate that it goes on this track almost entirely earnestly. Like, if Grant Morrison were really going to do this to this character, like, this is the way it would play out. Like, he gets home from trips, where the kids are dead. Like, there's nothing in this that lets you know that this is all playing the reader until you get to the end. Then you realize that all of this was just you getting played. This is Grant Morrison realizing... Readers don't like this. They say they don't like this, but this is what will sell the comic. This is, they like violence for the sake of violence. Like, you get to the end and you realize, like, this was all done to you.
It's like, you all complain about this kind of thing going in comics, but you are still buying the comics.
Yeah, but when you see a cover with Animal Man curled up in his bathroom and pills, that'll sell.
It's totally Red Arrow style.
And this scene is nowhere in any of these comics with him curled up in the bathroom floor with pills.
Right.
It's not in any of these issues. Well, but it will sell from the cover.
What's interesting is he does pick up the pills. And he's, like, talking to his cat, and then he gets a phone call, right? He's like, I know what happened. I have answers. So, I don't know. Like, for me, this stood out in sharp contrast to Arsenal, Rise and Fall. And, like, yeah. I know Arsenal came a lot later, but if you're going to have your family die and you're going to go crazy with grief, this is a way better way to do it.
Yeah, even though this isn't something Grant Morrison really did to Animal Man. Well, I guess we can talk about whether or not it... That's all encased in context. This wasn't done in continuity to Animal Man as something that will always and forever exist that happened to him. Like, at the end of the story, his kids are still alive, his wife is still alive. But it was still done way better than Rise and Fall.
Yeah, well...
Because I think their difference is this. It was trying to do these things to show... To showcase these things that happen to comic book characters. Rise and Fall was trying to be edgy.
Yeah.
And it was just...
It's trying to be gritty.
Very gritty.
So gritty.
I bet there's a lot of grit on the ground inside alleys where dead cats are.
All the grits everywhere.
Probably. You know, too, I think this, like... This goes to show, like, just... Animal Man's character, like, as a character, he's a lot more chill.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his family dies, and then he mourns, and then he, like, starts to get over it, and it feels more like he's going through a natural period of grief where he's, like, time-traveling and really upset, but he didn't fully lose his shit, and the whole time he's kind of like, you know, what do I do? He's looking for an answer, not a way to, like, you know, destroy everything or something.
Yeah, in other comics where they do this sort of thing and destroy a character's life, the character, in the supposed vein of making the character more edgy, gritty, and quote-unquote realistic, they make the character go fucking crazy and cry over dead cats, or destroy an entire intergalactic peace force and become a giant villain. Like, they do all these things that, in reality, aren't what a normal person would do at all. A normal person would be like a buddy. A normal person would grieve over his loss for a while. He would be angry. He would try to take revenge on something. He wouldn't go out and kill everything, and he wouldn't certainly turn to drugs, necessarily.
Yeah, I like how after he kills all the executives, who just incidentally are like, ho ho ho, the environment's stupid.
Yep.
Like, that, I love that about them. That's like, they're so shallow, that's their only thing. You know, he goes, oh god, I did a horrible thing and I don't feel any better. Instead of being like, I don't know. It wasn't gritty. It's like, you kill a dude, you feel bad. That sounds like a normal thing.
Yeah, it's not true to his character at all. For him to go out and wantonly destroy people and things, it's not what he does.
It's like, he's like a little like Captain America. You know? He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Captain America would, like, go out and take murderous revenge on people.
Yeah, probably not.
But Captain America is the best guy, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what did we think about his journey into time and then through the fields of lost stories and all that kind of thing?
I thought it was... I really liked the part where he goes through comic book character limbo. I mean, that's... It's absolutely true. I mean, there's so many comic book characters that have just... They just are gone now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought what I thought was particularly interesting was that Mr. Freeze was there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because now he's a really popular character again. And he was brought back by Bruce Timm and the guys who worked on Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah. He was portrayed in the film by our former governor.
That's unfortunate, yes.
Let's not speak of that.
And there are other characters in here that have since gotten rebooted. I don't remember there was one that had like a flaming sword. He was rebooted for a little bit there too. Where is he? In the collection, he's in page 198.
Yeah, I don't know what his name is.
What's the name of the team? Shadow something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was during Infinite Crisis.
I forget.
Flaming Magic Dude with a sword. Or Flaming Sword Magic Dude. I don't know, whatever.
What else?
Whatever. And I think Merrymaker's even been seen since, too.
I just want to say, like, when he's talking about the animals and they said something like, you know... Dog Force Squad or something like that. What was it actually called? It was like Canine Attack Force Squad or something.
Yeah.
Really stupid.
How the animals will never get.
I would totally read that. I just want to put that out there for any comics creators.
I mean, Crypto's not in the DCNU, Right? And the reboot that's happening right now with DC. Crypto pretty soon could be in these fields.
Space Canine Patrol Agents. I would read it. Weekly. Monthly. Whenever.
But I like how he goes on this journey. Even though we end up in this very meta place, he has to go on a journey to get to his realization.
Mm-hmm.
And this trait is very big on Animal Man's journey. Both through the trials and tribulations of becoming gritty, you know, eating all of his grits, and then to becoming meta. Meta.
I like how he gets into Grant Morrison's world, too. He, like, takes the script from the monkey, cuts a key out of it, puts the key in the lock, and then suddenly he's, like, at Grant Morrison's house. I thought that was a kind of neat, weird turnaround.
Nice mm-hmm. little transition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me a little bit of the whole comic book thing we read in The Filth, where the Suit Secret original came through from the comic book world mm-hmm. into the real world, and they were using the ink to create the thing, and it was very meta also.
Yeah.
I feel like this meta-ness was a lot better thought out, because it made a lot more sense.
Which is weird, because this is like, this is from 1980, when was this, 1989? And The Filth is from 2003? Like, it's weird to see a regression in a guy's character, like, or a guy's career.
Maybe Grant Morrison had some peyote buttons before he wrote The Filth.
It seems likely. It could also be that he was given more, like, artistic freedom, because this is a very still linear plot line, because it's like, you know, Animal Man sees all the people from outside of continuity, realizes he's within a continuity, and then talks to his creator, who is mm-hmm. making that continuity. And it's like, okay, that's really straightforward, but I guess, you know, if they're kind of like, you know, we trust you, Grant Morrison, make whatever you want, maybe he'll play with that idea in a less straightforward way.
Yeah. The other character I really liked in here is Psycho Pirate. That, he really reminded me of The Filth, with the rainbow coming out of his eyes.
I really like how he ended, because it's kind of like, he was crazy, and you felt bad for him, but, you know, he's in Arkham, so he must be a bad guy.
No, he definitely is.
But then, like, and he did all this crap, but then he was trying to prevent, like, the evil super Ultraman, Overman, from coming into the world. And he, I like at the end how he just kind of, like, drifted off, and he's like, I understand now. It was pretty sappy, but I thought that was an appropriate ending for him.
And for perspective, later on, when DC did the Infinite Crisis reboot, Psycho Pirate actually came before the Infinite Crisis started and came back to the DC Universe and started to talk about how there was another crisis coming and how there were all these different planets that were going to be reborn. Basically doing the same kind of doomsdaying that he is in this.
That's cool.
Well, he kind of caused Crisis on Infinite Earths, right?
Yes. Psycho Pirate's very much a multiverse character.
Yeah, he, like, somehow helped Anti-Monitor. I forget.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But the first DC Crisis, which is Crisis on Infinite Earths from 1985, was Psycho Pirate was one of the main villains, along with Anti-Monitor.
Hmm.
Yeah, FYI.
So, let's get into it. What do you guys think about Grant Morrison showing up in his own comic?
At first I was skeptical, but then I was like, this is really well done. Because, you know, like, you kind of see it coming from the second issue. You see the computer, and, you know, Animal Man looks out from the panel and sees the reader, and then later you see him, like, playing around the panels when he's fighting Overman. But once we got to the point where Grant Morrison's like, oh, shut up. And I'd like to give my acknowledgements to Karen Berger. And like, he was actually doing the acknowledgement page from a comic book. Like, Karen Berger is, or was, the editor-in-chief of Vertigo for a long time. So, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I like how he took the time to give a plug for PETA, put in the address in the comic, and like, oh, you're a hippie, Grant.
I kind of like what he does, though. He's like, because Animal Man's like, oh, you know, I'm this sort of person. I'm a good guy. I don't eat meat. I love animals. And Grant Morrison says, well, you know, that really depends on what your writer wants to do with you. I could make you eat burgers. And he goes, I'm a vegetarian. And Grant Morrison goes, no, I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of neat how he commented, like, it's his last run with this character. And he's like, well, who knows what the next guy might do? Maybe he'll make you fight, you know, a man powered by hamburgers. Slaughterhouse, yeah.
But I like how, even throughout the entire interaction, Animal Man was still his own consciousness. Even though it could be changed, it could be altered, it could be fucked with to no end, it was still his own consciousness in that he was horrified when Grant Morrison splattered the made-up people into the sky and it was raining blood. Animal Man was horrified, even though he saw them get created by Grant Morrison basically just saying, let's have some characters here because it'll be fun to draw. It still horrified Animal Man, even though he knew that they weren't real. They were real just as much as Animal Man was. And I like that it built up to that in a kind of way. In, like, the sort of realization that, you know, I go to sleep in my house, and then next I know I wake up in Paris, and I'm fighting this guy, and I don't remember how I got there. Like, as if the character of Animal Man actually existed, but his existence was limited to what we saw in the comics. There was nothing being filled in the gutters between issues.
Yeah, I think they actually mentioned, somebody says that the things that happen are created by their own memory. I think Dr. Hightower says it before he wears Psycho Pirate's mask.
Yeah.
And then Grant Morrison says, or he tells Animal Man that he is real.
And he's existed before Grant, and if Animal Man's lucky, he'll exist long after.
Yeah. Exactly.
I like that meta-commentary, that, like, characters have lives of their own, and if we just bother to remember them, or read or write them, you know, they'll always be there. Like the characters in Limbo, they say everyone will get out eventually if we just, you know, pick up the books.
Yeah. Just have to be read and remembered and brought back into existence. I mean, think about how many people got resurrected because of Project Superpowers.
Exactly, yeah. That's a good example.
There you go. Boom, look at that. Tying shit together.
Wow.
If you've listened to other episodes.
You're so good.
I'm a genius.
It's kind
of for genius.
It's a neat existentialist commentary too, because I think they talk about, like, not just their lives as comic book characters, but, like, is that all we are? Are we? And someone says something like, "You think you're the main character in your life, but you're actually just, like, watching these things happen."
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah, my other commentary that I liked, the other commentary in the book that I liked was the continuities and the reboots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the other Animal Man confronts this animal and is like, I fought crime and aliens, but it wasn't good enough. Like, what was wrong with me? And he's in limbo now, because he's not the Animal Man that gets red. The animal gets red is this one.
Yeah.
And it's like, what was wrong with him? And he's angry that he doesn't exist anymore. And just the way there's probably people who were reading it who were angry that he didn't exist anymore. Like, and I am going to get angry at Power Girl not existing anymore in the new DC Universe. Like, what's wrong with this character that they need to die? Are they not good enough for readers? I mean, they sell well enough. The stories are good enough. Just, why not? There's parts of this I really love. I actually love the whole thing.
What do we make of the end? Like, his reflection about his imaginary best friend and Foxy, and, like, saying goodbye. Like, that seemed a little harder for me to get my mind around.
Maybe it was, like, a commentary on, you know, these comic book characters that just drift off into obscurity. There was no end to them. They just kind of fell off. I mean, that's what's happening with Power Girl, right? For example, there was no wrap up. She didn't die in the DCU. She's just, nobody's going to write about her. Maybe that's what happened with Grant Morrison's his imaginary friend. Like, he never said goodbye to the friend, so the friend must be existing in limbo because he's not thinking about that friend anymore. So he went to say goodbye to offer some kind of conclusion. I don't know.
I think part of it is that, I mean, that was the imaginary friend that he had as a kid. And sort of the idea that you grow out of that phase. And sort of, he grew up and he forgot about Foxy and he moved on and Foxy stopped existing. And there's sort of a growth that needs to happen away from that. In that, that's sort of his rationalization for why the original Power Man's not good enough. Because Power Man, or not Power Man, sorry, Animal Man. The original Animal Man wasn't good enough. He had to grow. He had to evolve into some better character, some character that fit new stories in better ways. And so the same way he had to grow up from his imaginary friend, I mean, just an Animal Man fighting aliens and crime, I mean, that's okay, but there's a better Animal Man out there. There's a better Animal Man you can make. You can make better stories.
Well, the other thing, too, is the fox from Animal Man's drug trip is named Foxy also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I didn't even pick that up.
So maybe that... Maybe because Grant Morrison, you know, he had this character named Foxy in the story. But we didn't know that Foxy was also the name of his imaginary friend as a child. Maybe they're supposed to be the same character. And because we read the comic, now that character's rescued from Limbo. And that was what Grant Morrison was trying to do. He's trying to rescue his friend in some way.
Oh, I like that idea.
The whole point of this comic was to bring back his imaginary friend.
Maybe. Why not?
That's a great idea. No.
Using me to bring back his friend.
You wouldn't want to resurrect somebody if you could, Andy?
Well, maybe.
Even a cute little fox?
Yeah.
Who appears when you're...
on a peyote trip.
Exactly.
I like it.
I think there's a lot of different ways you can look at this. The interesting thing, one thing that's really interesting about this is post-Crisis on Infinite Earths, but pre any other crises in DC.
Yeah. So this is after their one attempt to make their timeline linear.
And then they made it linear 52 times over a few years later.
Yep.
Oh, DC.
Yeah,
okay. I think this is a little bit of a commentary on that, on rebooting universes and stuff, indirectly.
Oh, I think directly. I mean, with Psycho Pirate and all the different ones. I love the, like, the 70s Afro Superman. I don't remember what his name was.
He's like Sunshine Man or
Sun
something.
Yeah, or something,
oh my
yeah.
God, he was awesome.
Cool.
I want him to be back.
I loved all of the Green Lanterns, because... they were all kind of, like, weird stoner tripper type people.
You know, marijuana, green.
Yeah, man.
That must be it. What does it say? Turn on, tune in, drop out?
Something like that.
Okay.
And he was like, I represent, like, the magical love planet or something. Yeah. Really.
Oh, this one's got, like, spiky hair.
Oh, yeah, the punk Green Lantern. Yeah.
Well, I think the one with
Ultraman
is supposed to be the... those guys are the...
Crime Syndicate?
Yeah, Crime Syndicate guys.
Yeah, they strictly stopped existing after Crisis on Infinite Earths.
But then they came back with 52.
Yeah, they did. A lot of these came back after 52.
Yeah, but not Sunshine Man.
Oh, so sad.
I think it was pretty cool that he just, like, took all these random old characters or, like, what's the word? I want to say obliviated, but that's, like, a Harry Potter word. These, like, no longer existent characters and put them in just to be like, hey, don't forget them. Seems like a good use.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's true. There's a wealth of great characters out there that just... you know, they're just not around anymore because they just fell out of popularity, I guess.
And we even get cameos in here. There's Owlman in here from what's it called, Watchmen.
Oh yeah,
he makes an appearance.
Night Owl,
that's what it is.
Owlman's from Crime Syndicate.
Yeah, we get them all mixed up.
Yeah, it's okay. That's part of the reason why DC tried to do this reboot, or did Crisis on Infinite Earths, is because it was so confusing. There was like 9 Batmans and 152 Supermen.
Yeah. All their different iterations.
Yeah. I think this is similar to We Three in that it's got a good message, and it's really straightforward, you know?
Well, yeah. But it's not like the normal moral of the story comic book. I think saying that it's well structured like We Three as opposed to The Filth is just a commentary on Grant Morrison's writing style. But I think doing a meta commentary about comic books, this is one of the most effective I've seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get a little bit with Alan Moore and Promethea. There's some meta commentary there about the world of the story and how stories and characters live. But I think that pales in the comparison to the effectiveness of this one. This is done through and through really, really, really well.
Yeah.
To have an author talking to his characters, I mean, I think that reveals something really important about, you know, how characters look to authors, how they exist to them. And I think it's probably that directness of speech that makes for that good commentary.
That he's standing there literally talking to his character. Who's in a ball on the floor.
Well, he's fucking with him, too.
Yeah.
You know? He, like... I don't know how I feel about him having, like, the crap beaten out of Animal Man. As he's like, "Hi, audience, what's up?" And, like, Animal Man's getting beaten up in the background.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it makes it more interesting to draw. Like he says in the commentary, this is more interesting to draw. And people like seeing resolutions brought about through violence. Like, that's what people like to see. That's how the comic books work, is there's a deep political issue discussed, there's a discussion of the structure of comic books, and it's all solved through a good old-fashioned fist fight, where Animal Man comes out on top and therefore is proven right. But in the end, you just get Animal Man sitting on a fucking couch.
Yep, well, and he lost the fight, too.
Mm-hmm.
He got the crap kicked out of him.
But then that didn't matter, right? Because they just wrote it that he was fine.
Yeah, nothing is wrong. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is wrong at all.
I'm glad that they didn't just, like, kill off everyone as continuity, though. Like, a malevolent blow is, you know, your last run with the comic. Like, oh, I'm gonna murder his family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did we want to talk about the very 80s art?
Yeah, we can. I think the only thing that sticks out of this to me as being we so 80s is the costume design on a lot of the characters.
I feel like the coloring is very 80s. Like, why is James Highwater red?
I think he was supposed to be Native American.
I thought about that, and then I kind of wondered. Really what,
I don't know if that's why he's red, but I got the idea that he was supposed to be Native American from the fact that he said his grandfather told him that his animal spirit was the eagle.
I was hoping he was alien.
Yeah,
no, aliens are yellow in this.
Oh, yeah, that's right, sorry.
Like, I was hoping the coloration thing wasn't a racial thing, just because it seems really poorly done.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be really not good. I don't know, I think the art makes a lot of successes, in that, like, it does the trips really, really well. Limbo is drawn incredibly well, I think. And I love the contrast of all of these comic book worlds, even if they're fucked up, like Overman, the world that he comes from. The coloring is bright everywhere. It's all so bright and colorful. And then you get into the quote-unquote real world with Grant Morrison. And everything is just shades of gray and yellow. And it's all very, very drab. Horrible.
I think Animal Man points that out, right?
Yeah, it's like, this world is so gray. And so, the coloring's really 80s, but I think it's still effective in a lot of places. And then you also get scenes with, like, Jason Blood where it's not so good. Although I have to say, I think my favorite is the covers. These are some amazing covers in this collection.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
The one of Psycho Pirate spewing comic books out of his eyeballs.
I think even the covers are very meta, too.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I think it's not comic book art necessarily, but the last issue where Animal Man's, like, laying on the floor and it's a photo of Grant Morrison kicking him.
Yeah, an actual photograph of it.
I thought it was pretty interesting. I like Animal Man as a character.
Yeah. He seems decent. I like that about him.
But I appreciate that he The thing with Animal Man is, that's sort of the most you can say about him. He's decent. He's normal. He's average. He's just Buddy Baker. Normal guy with a wife and kids and a family. He's not Superman, you know. He doesn't have superpowers that are that badass. He doesn't have super weak powers. He's just a normal dude trying to do right in the world. And I think it's interesting that even though Grant Morrison kills the guy's family and makes him gritty, it does it in part of a trying to tell a larger story. Because Animal Man as he is, I mean, you can tell stories like he did. You can buy volumes 1 and 2, but I think Grant Morrison's commentary on his own writing when he was writing Animal Man is pretty accurate. It's just fight of the week, basic old Captain Planet style. Like, people loving on hating animals, and then Animal Man beating them into the ground and be like, yeah, killing animals is bad, and you know it is because I killed this dude. Well, not killed, but beat this guy up.
Yeah.
It's just that's the most complex story you can tell unless you do this kind of thing, and this is done really well. I like that he didn't change Animal Man's character to make this story.
Yeah,
he let the character that already existed go on this adventure.
I like that he was able to make a really strong point without beating us over the head with it. It was like he led us along on it really elegantly, I think. And, like, you know, we followed Animal Man on this journey and discovered what was happening, and while we could say, like, oh, there's going to be, you know, a meta-commentary here, as it became more and more obvious, it was still not like, oh, I feel like I'm being, you know, lectured about the state of art or creation or something.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not really any lecturing going on here.
Yeah, it's just kind of cool.
Well, it seems like we're kind of talked out on this.
Yeah.
Why do you think Grant Morrison chose to do this? Do you think he did it as a way just to say goodbye to this character? Because I don't think he does this in any other comics.
I don't know too much about Animal Man. This was my first encounter, but it seems like Animal Man really is like a stereotypical kind of old school comic book character. And frankly, just from the sound of him, he sounds like he would be kind of boring. Maybe this is just, like, a good way to kind of spice him up and make him more real. You know, make him stand out more. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think doing this to Animal Man would have been a conscious choice. Because Animal Man is a pretty bland character. It's like I said, he's your normal, everyday, average dude and happens to like fighting crime with his powers that he got from aliens. As normal and average as that can be. But that's also why people love him. The thing that makes him boring is why comic book readers like Animal Man. And so from a writer's perspective, what do you do? the thing that makes him attractive to people is the thing that makes him so difficult to write. So as an artist with your writing, what can you do to sell comics? You can make him gritty and edgy. But that's not good. You don't want to do that because you like the character too. Mm-hmm. You love this guy for all the same reason your readers like this guy. And so I think I can imagine Grant Morrison sitting there grappling with the idea of what to do to change up this comic. He's like, I know I could do this. I have this power as a writer to kill the guy's family and to make him grittier and edgier and make him work with villains to achieve this purpose and kill bad guys. I could do that, but that feels wrong. So I have to find some way to legitimize that. And why not show the audience that process of, I could do this. This is something I could do. I could make the last 6 issues on my run be that. I could make this character go that way. And I'll show you what it would look like and why you don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Do we want to rate it?
I think so.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
4.
Go. Why?
4. I'm going to 4. I don't know. I really like it. I've always really liked this one. I think if you ever talk to somebody who says that made a commentary in comics is done poorly, or that it's trite, or anybody who talks about made a commentary in a book or in any kind of medium, and they say it's this, it's that. They have a comment on it. I want to give them this because this is how you do a made a commentary about your medium. And not have it be trite or wrong or... I don't know. This feels so naturally done.
Mm-hmm.
And like Jen said, I mean, you can see the meta commentary coming from a mile away. You can see it. But then when it finally does hit you, it's not... It's done in a way that you can still respect. And I don't know. I kind of like the art. I'm not going to knock the art too much. I'll give it a minus one because it is Weezo 80s art.
Okay.
There are some bad pages, and it's pretty much straightforward colors. But the covers are great. Some of the full pages are awesome. And like I said, this is the way you draw a drug trip. Giant fucking whale, a giant goddamn eagle. Eagle? What the hell's an eagle?
It's what you see on a drug trip.
Been talking too much today. Fucking universes and shit. It's awesome.
Alright, okay, I'll go next.
Okay.
If you don't mind, Jen.
Go for it.
I'm going to give this a 3.5. It was entertaining, but it's, at the same time, it's kind of like... And to your point, it was good meta-commentary, but it wasn't like... I don't think it was a great comic in the world of comics. I don't know, I found it entertaining and I wasn't bored reading it. I did see the meta-commentary coming, just like Jen did. Maybe that hurt it for me a little bit. Maybe I wanted to be surprised more.
You wanted there to be sort of a more smart turn.
Yeah, but I think, like you said, that's the thing that Grant Morrison seemed like he was doing, right? He didn't want it to be some kind of smart turn. He just wanted to say, these are the things that people love, people buy, but complain about. I don't know. It's good. Like, if somebody was like, oh, is Animal Man worth reading? Yeah, I think Animal Man is worth checking out. As a Grant Morrison comic, I think he is a better writer now than he was.
Yeah. I mean, this is well written, well structured, I think. Yeah. I think if you pick up Batman Inc., it's better written than this.
Agreed. From the art, it's typical. It's like regular 80s art. It wasn't like... It wasn't bad. And it wasn't, you know... If nobody tried to do anything crazy with it, that would have potentially hurt it. But it was, I mean, it was fine art.
I think I'm willing to cut the art more slack just because of the way that the artist had to work with frames in order to convey those parts of the story, with frames breaking open and Overman being trapped in the frame. I loved that page.
Mm-hmm.
Overman being trapped in the comic and just being written into oblivion.
Okay, so yeah, 3.5.
Word.
Also 3.5. I like the commentary, but at the same time, like, yeah, Animal Man is cool. He seems like a good guy, but I feel like this didn't give me even that much depth to him. I feel like I got more depth from, like, Grant Morrison as a writer than I did about Animal Man as a character. And while that, you know, maybe that was the point, but, you know, Animal Man's the title character, and I still feel like I don't know him too well. So, I don't know. As for the art, I'm a little like, because it is a little too 80s for my taste. But it was good. I would... If someone, like, told me they liked Animal Man, but they hadn't read this, I would say you should read this because it's interesting. Or if someone wanted to, like, look at, you know, how artists comment on their own work, I would recommend this. So, it was a fun read, but, you know, it had... It wasn't the most captivating thing I've ever read. So, yeah, 3.5.
Okay. It's pretty legit.
Yeah.
3.5s and a 4.
Yeah.
We'll see next week how well Doom Patrol holds up. That's also written by Grant Morrison. That'll finish up our Grant Morrison little arc here. And I fail. I don't know what the artist is.
I don't either.
The artist... Well, there's like 5 people listening on this thing. You can figure it out.
And we'll tell you next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's volume number 1. It's called Crawling Under the Wreckage.
Crawling from the Wreckage.
Crawling from the Wreckage? Sure. And in case you don't want to figure out all this jumble of words I've been putting at you, because really I fail at talking, you can go to the website, www.atomicpowersupercast.com, and on that website it will be written down correctly, and it will be linked to Amazon, which will also have it written down correctly.
Yay.
But if you want to just yell at us and complain at us and write us and tell us how much we're failing at talking at you, you can send us an email
at atomictardsupercast@gmail.com.
But if you think that's too many words for you, you can also hit us up on Twitter.
Which is APSupercast.
So twitter.com/...
APSupercast. I guess I should always say that. I never do. You always add it.
I know. It's no, getting that still interplay going. Okay. You should stick with it.
Okay.
And of course, you can always just make sure you hear next week's episode just by subscribing to us on...
iTunes!
Okay, next week I will get you out of iTunes limbo, I promise. I almost said wimbo. God. We need to wrap this up so I can go have a glass of water or something.
Yes, we are all tired. Apparently.
So, that's next week.
All right.
So until then,
goodbye.
Bye.